On today's episode of the Glue Guys, the Nets are in the playoffs. They're the seventh seed. They beat the Clippers. Hey, we're going to talk about all that. And Jacques Vaughn, Nets coach for life. Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Oof. Check us out on Twitter. At Mike Smeltz is my Twitter handle. This bit will not die. This bit will not die,
all right,
Brian.
At the Brian Egan on Twitter. Please, we have to get more followers than Mike.
But if you actually like us, at BK Glue Guys on Twitter, netsdaily.com. The Athletic. This season Brian, I'm trying to sell some subscriptions buddy.
Sorry.
This is an unprecedented sports season of like which we have never seen. To read about it, to know about it, to analyze it. Go to the go to the athletic.com/glueguys and you are going to be feasting on sports journalism. A veritable feast of sports journalism. 40% off an annual subscription. You know what's even great? Get it for yourself. Get it for a friend. Get it for a family member. If we rack up 100,000 subscriptions, Brian and I will get a free merit badge from the Athletic Girl Scouts.
That doesn't sound accurate.
Does
that happen?
No, is that a thing? That's not right. Brian! Whoa! Wow. Whoa! Stop the presses! Stop the presses! The Nets.
W's. Stacking dubs.
Are the best team
Here's
in the bubble.
Take an L. You take an L. We're stacking dubs over here, Mike.
Could you have ever predicted the Nets would be the best team in the bubble? One of the best teams in the bubble?
I don't remember what the tone was of the show leading up to the bubble. I think it was that we were going to be dominant. I feel like that was that there was an undertone of Brooklyn Nets dominance in what we were saying leading up to that. No, of course not, Mike. What's going on here? I mean, how do you explain this?
2020 has been a shitty year. Can we say that?
Oh, wow.
At least there's this little chestnut of positivity that the Nets have been delivering us. This is nothing short of miraculous. And I do believe this. The bubble sort of condenses everything down, and the talent gaps between one team to the other because of the unique situation makes it so a Rodions Karutz, Tyler Johnson, Chris Chioza-led Brooklyn Nets could be defeating the Clippers and the Bucks, two teams that have every right to win the championship this year. I get it.
I feel like I want to do like a whole psychiatric study of this season because it does seem like we're at a weird advantage. I'm kind of reminded of this thing that I was reading about like pain and how context is really the sort of like main, you know, indicator of how much pain you're going to be in. So, for example, like I did a study like if you're at war and you get shot, you need less morphine than if you're at home and you're like walking around and you get shot. It's because the contexts are totally different. If you're at war and you get shot, like kind of good. Like I get to go home. I didn't die. And now, you know, I'm feeling like my chances of getting out of this hellscape are pretty good. And that's great for me. If you get shot at home, it's like, well, I was going to go to work and now, and now I can't pay my bills because I got shot by a jerk. So I'm going to need some morphine, please. And I feel like the context, sorry, this is abstract, but there is like a certain level of like, you know, good teams who are on their way to like winning a championship this season now are like thrust into this really weird situation in a bubble in Florida, and they're maybe not loving it. And the Nets, who's kind of packed the gills with like fringe players at this point, are pretty stoked to be playing competitive basketball in the bubble. So it could be that there is, I don't know, a contextual imbalance there that's letting us have this like, you know, mental mental advantage over who we're playing. Mike, are you with me on this? Are you feeling this?
I am 100% with you. And I don't think this is the perfect, but if the Nets needed morphine, I guess Jacques Vaughn is the What's the person in the hospital that gives you morphine?
Anesthesiologist.
He's the anesthesiologist. He is dosing. He's picking up the correct dosage. He's looking at the vials. He's saying, you know, the Nets need this much motivation for this game. They need to run a zone defense. He picks up the zone defense vial. Says, I'm going to put that.
He's like, Musa, get over here. I got a fat syringe for you.
A fat syringe of John and Musa. Actually, yeah. He is in the syringe. Musa is Mr. Yeah. Syringe himself.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so we'll talk about today. We will talk about the Nets. If you didn't know, secured the seventh seed in the East, which at one time, remember, we were debating the Nets going to tank. They should be tanking, right? That was a fun conversation.
Bad take. That's not a good take anymore.
So we'll talk about the matchup with the Toronto Raptors. This will be a light sort of preview. It'll be just like thoughts and feelings about it. We'll talk about Jacque Vaughn, but let's trace back to this Clippers game because so Brian and I, as we do, you know, we're communicating constantly. Brian and I are constantly in touch, trying to improve the show, trying to bring you the best product possible here on the Glue Guys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic 40%.
What you don't realize, what you don't realize about our show is that we actually do, this is like the fourth or fifth take of the show. You know, every time we do one of these shows, we'll have like 4 or 5 hours of just dress rehearsals.
We are the David Fincher of podcasters. We go over it and over it again until it is imparted in us, is embedded in our soul, these lines. And that is what
we did, like, this right here, this part where we're talking about the rehearsals, it was itself rehearsed, you know, it's all very meta.
The Clippers game, like Brian, you and I, we were talking about it, we're like, we can do other stuff on Monday because they're not going to beat the Clippers. Kawhi's going to play. It's one of the, actually Kawhi, you know, set the game before, and then I think they have another day off, and then they're going to play the Nuggets on Tuesday night or something, or Tuesday afternoon. So it was like, okay, the Clippers are going to, you know, try to win this game, secure, get some footing, and then when they play the Nuggets, it gives them a little cushion. The Nets, at the time we were leading into the game, looked like Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and Jared Allen would not be playing in this game. Again, sit out the troika that is the Brooklyn replace Nets. But yet, the Nets had the most prolific offensive quarter in the NBA this season. They shot 85% in the first quarter from the field.
Against what's supposedly like the most dominant defense in the NBA, right? I mean, where do the Clippers rank on
one,
that now?
One of the better defensive talents, let's say, because the team has been a little disjointed because of injuries and Kawhi sitting out. But I can't believe... You know, Twitter is a really bad place, but Nets Twitter has been truly a delight to be a part of during this bubble experience, because I feel like, I know everyone feels this way too. I am shocked. I am shocked that the Nets are able to string together these wins. And the only reason, there's two reasons why I can sort of account for this. Well, one being that my bubble theory, that I don't think is like that original, but that the gaps in talent are smushed together because of this weird circumstance. This is a completely foreign way to play professional basketball for all of these guys. It's more like AAU, but that was, you know, a decade ago for a lot of these players, or maybe 5 years ago for some of them. So this is a completely foreign experience, you know, no travel, no home crowds. We're playing games at weird times at 1 o'clock. If you're a Clippers team, now this game was at 9 p.m., so it was within the Clippers body clock wheelhouse, and I'm sure they've adjusted. But, you know, like a certain, like the Bucks game was the 1:30 tip. That's a weird time to play basketball. Weird stuff can happen at that time frame. So there's a lot of strangeness going on. But the second thing that you have to give credit to, gotta give credit to Jacque Vaughn, man. This is, you know, when things are bad, we go right at the coach and we say it's all his fault. Kenny Atkinson, your fourth quarter end of game possession plays are lacking. We are mad at you because Spencer Dinwiddie can't hit a mid-range jumper. Well, we got to give Jacque Vaughn credit for taking the ragtag bunch of Sandlot basketball players down to Orlando. Caris LeVert is Benny the Jet Rodriguez. Joe Harris is Goldberg. Jared Allen is Squints Palidoris. I think that's his name. I don't know who Wendy Peppercorn is, but I can't wait to meet her. Yeah. Amazing job by Jacque Vaughn. And what he's done is he's given them confidence. We talked about this. He's given these guys confidence. They believe. Chris Chioza believes what he's doing. You know, when Musa's out there for the very short window of time, Musa's confidence is even higher than it was before, which seems incredible. And just amazing. What a game, Brian. What a game. And Tyler Johnson shut me up, which we can talk about later too.
Did he? You're willing to eat the crow on Tyler Johnson?
Absolutely not.
Yes.
No.
I don't think it's there's somebody's cooking up some crow. I don't think you have to eat it quite yet, but it's in the there's a pot of crow stewing in the back that you may or may not have to
do
eat.
Do you cook crow in a pot or is it a rotisserie?
It's up to you. I mean, Boston Market? You could pan sear the crow if you want. You know, it's truly truly up to you.
Definitely marinating in the fridge right now. I'm not going to apologize for my Tyler Johnson taste. I will say it was like
he had a good solid game above average. People were really ready to have us eat that crow. They were about to like force feed crow sliders down our throats a little bit early here. But I mean, it was a good game. Don't get me wrong. And I'm optimistic that he can continue on this track here. And so maybe there will be crow. Mike, you tell me when we're ready to eat the crow. Okay, and I'm there with you.
I'm not quite there yet. He had a good shooting night. I've had very many when you talk about a team for a while, you're critical of the team. At times, right? You're critical of players. But I feel like I got more like Tyler Johnson proved you wrong tweets than of almost anything I've ever said on this pod. The Tyler Johnson mob is out there. The tie hive.
Wow.
I'm trying to workshop that.
It's perfect. That's publishable. You're ready to go. Yeah, but to sort of piggyback off what you were saying before regarding the weird times and everything, it's funny because like I am trained to have a pessimistic view of Nets basketball in general. And so whenever we like beat good teams, I'm always like, well, like what could it have been? But here's the thing, like in all of the games that we've won, the on-court visuals, the offense have been like pretty unbelievably attractive. Like it's not because like we, you know, got the Bucks to play in the muck with us. It's like we actually played a pretty attractive game of basketball when we were doing at our best. Which I guess is not something I'm used to for this kind of team. Cause like generally if we're going to beat good teams, it's like, oh, like that was a weird, like turnover heavy, like slog fest that like, you know, ended up being 91-90. But no, we just kind of like, especially in that Clippers game, like we get off to obviously the insane first quarter, which was like just a work of art, just a beautiful work of art, the thing that I'll cherish always. But then like when the game got serious and Kawhi like decided like, okay, like time to win the game now. We continued to like have an aesthetically pleasing offense that like stayed the course. You know, we didn't just get lost and back in our ISO heavy ways or whatever. So I mean, like again, credit to Jacques Vaughn. And do we need to talk about now if Jacques Vaughn is did he clinch a playoff berth? Did he clinch a jobby job?
Let's put a pin on that for the moment.
Oh,
because we'll get to that. But sorry. First,
whoa, my mistake,
fellas. Are you prepared to unveil your summer bod? The beaches are opening. The beaches are open. I mean, they may be shut down depending on where you're listening to this, but the beaches are open and the sun is shining. That's for sure. The sun will always be shining. And Brian, the bushes must be tamed. Manscaped. Manscaped is here to ensure your post-quarantine bod is ready for the wild. And really, it's not even post-quarantine bod. We're all quarantining still, I hope. Manscaped. We should be trimming the bushes. If you can, if you know what I mean. This is what Manscaped can do for you. They can get you a perfect package 3.0 kit with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0. That's waterproof. That is cordless. It's a body trimmer now. And it has a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This is the best trimmer on the market for those of you in need of a chest shave. This third generation. This is a third generation shaver now. Okay, the trimmer features skin-safe technology to reduce manscaping accidents and incidents, both accidents and incidents. And this is a part of a perfect package. You'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver. This is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer because we know how painful chafing can be when you're wearing your bathing suit all day. It's painful.
And the worst is when you start chafing and then you're just stuck at the water park with the chafe all day, nowhere to go. Prisoner to the chafe.
Don't be a prisoner to the chafe. Set yourself free. Go to manscaped.com. Use the code THEATHLETIC20 to get yourself 20% off free shipping right now. And that is manscaped.com. The code THEATHLETIC20, 20% off free shipping. And that's going to get you two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. Go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC20. Okay, so you posited the question, does he deserve a job? How would you rate Jock? How has he done so far in the bubble?
I want to talk about like the least important things first, which is just his appearance on the sidelines, his body language, which I am super in favor of. I think it's also like transformed a lot from his Orlando days. He was one of those sort of arms crossed coaches, you know, back in Orlando. I think of him as like a sort of like this. He also had like a little bit more weight back then. He was carrying a little bit more weight, so he was kind of like, you know, how when you're when you're a little swollen and you're just using that using that to prop up your arms. That's how I think of him in Orlando. And now he's arms straight down, inquisitive, open. He's a little bit more, he's in the sort of spiritual realm, I feel like, you know, and that's, I think that's going to serve him nicely going forward. You know, like his the way that he engages with like even the referees when he's questioning the thought, it's like he really just like wants to know. It's like I'm really curious about why you fucked that up so bad. Like I just want to know.
And that's how you would deliver it too.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve Javy, come here. Yeah, absolutely. How's the family? Everything's great. I just want to ask you something. Just so, what were you seeing over there when you fucked it up so bad? Because I'm just trying to get, because I appreciate the thought and the viewpoint. I just want to see it. How did you fuck it up?
I want to be in your head.
Yeah, it's great, and I agree with you. It's incredible because so often, like, this is a bad thought process that I've had about basketball for a long time, probably because mostly, like, I think about basketball coaching staffs more like a football coaching staff. We're like a football coaching staff. I feel like everyone is of the philosophy of the head coach. The head coach picks all of his assistants to run the plays that he wants to do. If you want to run a 3-4 or a 4-3, if you want to run sort of a spread offense, or you want to run a more conservative run style offense, all the coaches that are from below the tree of the head coach in football, sort of based off of that philosophy. And in basketball, that's what I had previously thought too. But then you see someone like Nick Nurse come out of Dwayne Casey's coaching staff, and they're totally different, right? And Nick Nurse has had obviously amazing success. And you see Kenny Atkinson. I think Kenny Atkinson's brand, work super hard, sweat a bunch, you know, try to develop the young guys as much as they possibly can. But part of development is like there's a constant pressure that is applied to development, right? Development isn't going to happen by just like, kind of letting the guys be free and be wild. No, development happens by constantly calling out people. And we know through many stories that Kenny famously called out D'Angelo Russell like all the time. And that's how D'Lo got better. That's how we were led to believe D'Angelo Russell got better. Jacques Vaughn has been seemingly completely different. And he obviously was Kenny's lead assistant on the staff. He's now still the interim coach. But he's been about carrying around that bamboo, building confidence. We've seen like these presentations about the Voting Rights Act and sort of like the more Phil Jackson-esque parts of coaching. It seems what Jacques Vaughn is pulling out here. To get back to the original question, does he have this job? I don't say he has the job, but he's doing about as impressive of a thing that you could possibly do in a scenario to move the needle further towards his side, right? Like, the only thing you could really get on him is that the defense has been bad, but this team doesn't have any good defenders. You know, this team is a bunch of G-leaguers, and typically G-leaguers aren't known for their defense. And
also, defense is the kind of thing that you need to be playing with the guys that you're playing defense with for a long time to really foment a truly good defense. It's hard when you're playing with a bunch of new guys.
And young guys. And like, typically, younger players are bad at defense. That's just how it is in the NBA. Like, younger players aren't as good at playing defense as other ones. And this team is being led by Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and then it's Jared Allen, Chris Chioza. You know, it's just a bunch of younger dudes out there. Jacques has been going into the bubble. I don't know what your mindset was, but I was like, there's no way Jacques Vaughn's going to get this job, because we got to look at next year. And I still believe this. We got to look at next year. Who's the coach for Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant? We're not looking at who the coach is for Chris Chioza, okay? But if I am Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, I'm seeing this impact that Jacques Vaughn seems to be having, at least from the outside. Maybe internally it's different, but from the outside, man, it looks interesting. You know, this team is playing at a really high level. Offensively, they're sharing the ball better than they had been all season. If you look at the assist totals for each of the players on the Nets, Caris, I think, had 13 or 12 assists last night in the Clippers game. So that's obviously an extraordinary number. But then there are a couple of four assist guys on the team. The game before the Clippers game, there's like four players on the team who had four more assists. There's more sort of equalized ball sharing that is happening on the team, as opposed to the traditional Kenny Atkinson style, which was point guard focused. One guy gets to eat and kind of feed everyone else. This team seems to be much more of like eat, like Rhodey's allowed, given the green light to shoot, you know, 3-point shots. Tyler Johnson's given the green light to shoot mid-rangers. Like, everyone's kind of getting a let to do what they want to do.
I'll say this. I think, like, maybe what Jacques Vaughn's sort of, what I'm beginning to see as part of his genius, and I'm going to call it capital G genius here, Just kidding. I don't know yet. We'll see. But part of it is that he let Tyler Johnson do what he wanted to do. I'm using Tyler Johnson as the example again, and I will continue to do this forever. But so like his ratio of mid-range shots has like precipitously declined, and his ratio of three-point shots has, you know, climbed closer and closer to just like every shot he's taking is a three. So last night he took 11 total field goals, 9 of which were three-pointers, and the vast majority were catch and shoot. He wasn't playing point guard for almost, I don't think, any possession, at least not like in the traditional sense. And so he's basically moved out of the playmaking position where he was getting kind of baited into taking mid-range shots, and now he's become a kind of catch-and-shoot three-point threat, which is feels much more natural, I think, at a glance. I think everyone would agree. You know, that only took Jacques Vaughn 5 games to know, like, hey, this is what's happening with Tyler Johnson. He's getting, people are sagging on him, letting him come into the elbow area, and then they're going to push up on him, and he is the kind of guy that will be baited into a low-efficiency two-point shot. How do we work around that without just, like, benching him in the way that Kenny Atkinson would? Just, like, quickly kind of move some stuff around, and boom, now Tyler Johnson seems to be finding his way again.
My thing about Jacques Vaughn is, has he proven that he is the coach, though, for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? Because ultimately, again, that's who Marks is hiring for. He's not hiring for this team that we're seeing. He's hiring for those two guys, and then Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, whatever trade may happen, that's the team that he's hiring for.
Yeah, I think that little piece of evidence lets me think, like, yes, you know, more than just like, I mean, obviously this is like, however, this is 8 games. It's going to be really hard to derive any real macro trends and patterns about his coaching style quite yet. And just as like little tiny little reconfigurations of the minutes disbursement and where players are getting their shots up. It seems like he's the kind of guy that can like think on his feet, you know, make like, you know, informed decisions quickly enough that you can beat really good teams in a bubble. And that's the kind of thing where I think like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving will be best served. It's just like, because at that level, what you're really trying to do is make like minor alterations to like who's playing where, when, and why. You're not really like, you don't have time to make Tyler Johnson into the next big thing. That's not on your mind, but you do have time to like get his ratio of three pointers to feel like, you know, mid-range shots corrected and in a position where he can actually be like contributing to W's. Those tiny alterations you can do. So maybe he could be like the kind of guy that also does Kenny Atkinson style rehabilitations of people's career, like whole stock. That's possible, but he just doesn't need to be. And again, like we don't have enough information to know if that's the case, but just those little alterations, like just the idea that he's basically saying like moved Rodion Skrukš in and out of the roster, or out of the lineup. Like he started last night and, but he wasn't for a long time and he's been doing well. Like he's just, he's open-minded in a way that I appreciate. And I guess like if he wasn't open-minded in this particular setting, that would be like damning, right? That would be super damning. That'd be terrible. But
there is one advantage that he is getting in this, which is basically like this is a no-lose situation, right? Like even if the Nets came out and lost every game, like it really wouldn't impact him all that much. He's improving, right? Like Jacques Vaughn's stature within the team, I feel like, at least outside, is improving. And he has a bunch of players who are young and hungry, plus like Garrett Temple, you know, who's a little older. But so like those guys are more willing to do what a new coach says, as opposed to older players like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan. Those guys may not like super be willing to change the way the offense is being played, because really the offense is different. It is much more, we're going to share the ball. Everyone's going to get to hold the ball a bit. Everyone's going to get to make a decision. I mean, look at Rodion Skrukš. You brought him up. He played 31 minutes, 7 points, 3 from 6 from the field. He got to take four three-pointers, which is a lot for like early season Rodi, who was terrified to shoot the ball. And now he's given the green light to shoot 4 three-pointers. And he had 4 assists and 4 turnovers, which means that he either in either circumstance is either ending in a bucket when he's controlling the ball like that, or it's going to go over the other team. But he's still given the runway to have those 4 turnovers. That's almost more impressive to me than the 4 assists. So it's like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, there's going to be a natural hierarchy that immediately establishes. And it's not like this team is, I don't know if egalitarian is the term, but it this team is in all like everyone's on the same level. LeVert is obviously the star of the team. And then Joe Harris is like the second scoring option. If they can get him a 3, he's the second guy. And Jared Allen has been getting a tremendous amount of flexibility. And then right after we hear from our friends from Indochino, I want to talk about Jared Allen just a minute. Jared Allen to me is the primest of prime examples and the one that matters the most, because Jared Allen has put a string of games together that he hasn't been this good except for like very early in the season. Very early in the season, Jared Allen had a bunch of games where he was scoring like 15 points a game and having 10 rebounds. And then he basically kind of disappeared, was completely uneven. Obviously, DeAndre Jordan got moved into the starting lineup when Kenny Atkinson got fired, and everyone, you know, we all fell into a Jared Allen camp or DeAndre Jordan camp, and we have yet to extricate ourselves from either side. But now that DeAndre Jordan is not in Orlando and Jared Allen's just been given free reign, Jared Allen is showing the thing that makes him extremely valuable and will make it an extremely tough decision about whether to pay him, because the Nets are going to have to make that decision on whether to extend Jared Allen. Because what he is showing here, because partly Jacques Vaughn's giving him the run to do so, I mean, Jared Allen played 37 minutes against the Clippers. That's an insane number for most NBA players, but for a center, and particularly in a bubble format where everyone, you know, you're playing a bunch of close games, that's a really impressive number. He scored 16 points on 7-for-9 from the field. He's been given the ability to actually handle the ball. He had 16 rebounds and he had 4 assists. And that's not uncommon. I think Jared Allen the game before that had 8, which is, again, an insane number if you're a center, unless if you're Nikola Jokic. What we're seeing from Jared Allen is the thing that makes you, if you're Josai and you're worried about luxury tax, if I'm Sean Marks and I go to him and I say, I know you're worried about money, Jared Allen is going to cost a heck of a lot of money, more than just his contract because of luxury tax. But he's 22 years old, 23. I don't know. He's almost 23 or 22, whatever. And he is a guy who can get you 8 assists in a game, and he can also get you 5 blocks in a game. And he can, anytime he's around the basket, he's going to score. Plus, he's just a nice guy who can build a computer. We have to pay him. We have to pay tall Bill Gates.
This is, it's interesting though, because it's like, you know, he's getting good numbers, but his opportunity, like right now, is huge. Like, so just thinking back to March 10th, right, when we played the Los Angeles Lakers in that legendary W that we had. Here was Jared Allen's stat line. He shot 1-for-2 in 20 minutes, 3 points, 1-for-4 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds, a couple steals. Just not an effective stat line, just not a presence on the floor. You know, I mean, 7 rebounds is fine, whatever. But that whole like month of March leading up to it, he was averaging like, I guess that's 6 points, 7 points a game. It's interesting to think just how much he's benefiting from this amount of the lack of anybody else playing his position. You know, like there's just not another person that can be DeAndre Jordan and compete for him for those minutes. And I think that the competition is just like not his game. He just doesn't want it. He's like, if I'm going to be competing for these minutes, like you're going to get them, which is sad and not good. But also, like, I can kind of relate to that on a certain level. Like, I don't know, like he's up against this guy who's been in the league for like a really long time. He, you know, already he's been thrust into a mentor mentee relationship that he didn't sign up for. He's just like, ugh, like, fine, take it. I don't know. Like, you know, like I can't pretend to be happy about coming off the bench behind DeAndre Jordan. Basically, one of the big things we often talked about with DeAndre Jordan is like choosing one or the other for various minutes is like you're getting more playmaking with DeAndre Jordan, and that may not be true for very long. Jared Allen seems to be getting a good, like, he's got an awesome rhythm with Caris LeVert at the very least. Like, that thing is working nicely for the first time. And also, we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about just, like, how much better Caris LeVert's playmaking has been in this whole situation, which is the little, like, there's a side burner, a tiny little saucepan full of crow with my name on it, Mike, because I had been critical of Caris LeVert's sort of emergency style playmaking, which wasn't effective, which he's really gotten a lot better at just in the course of these 8 games. And I have no doubt that's due to mostly him being like shouldering the entire responsibility and getting a lot of practice at it. There's a big question for me for is like, is the DeAndre Jordan situation is going to be, that's a roadblock, full stop. You know, if you can't continue to be this level of engaged without playing 37 minutes, like that's a big problem. It's worth considering like whether or not you want to sign up for that long term. So like it is like a weird thing to say, but it's like, it would be great if we could offer him 37 minutes a game next year, but we can't,
we just can't afford it. We just can't do it to you, Jared. The center position, what makes it so difficult is that these two guys are definitively centers, right? Because let's look at Philly for a second. And Philly is having issues with, before Simmons got hurt, they had to start Horford and Embiid for most of the year together. And they finally made the decision, Shake Milton's going to start over Al Horford. No matter what you want to do in the modern NBA, starting two guys who should be centers, there just isn't that much of a benefit. You could do a thing next year where you start Kyrie, Caris LeVert, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, and Jared Allen. And basically you pull DeAndre Jordan like within the first 4 minutes. Jared gets run, and then DeAndre's back in, and then you're flip-flopping center throughout the rest of the game. But DeAndre Jordan's getting a start at power forward next to Jared Allen for 4 minutes. So we just give DeAndre Jordan the starter reps. And at the end of the game situation, to be honest, both those guys probably will not really be on the floor except for defense. Like, if you're going to run an offense-defense switch, Kevin Durant becomes your five on offense, and then you bring Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan back in at the end of game for a defensive possession or two, right? So it's all about starting, but you can't really do that. You can't start both Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan just because, like, you're basically wasting those minutes. The spacing would be so cramped, particularly with Caris LeVert out there not being a good shooter. You would start slow in every game. Sure, defensively, you'd be intriguing. And this all links back to, again, this awkward situation you're talking about. You can really only play one center right now in the NBA, and there's only so many minutes to go on the floor for both of those centers. And there's only so many crucial minutes that really matter to a guy like DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan obviously didn't want to be a bench player anymore, because we know that, because the minute Jacque Vaughn got in there, DeAndre Jordan started games. Like, that was a clear line. Kenny Atkinson is the coach, Jared Allen's the starter. Kenny Atkinson's fired, DeAndre Jordan now is the starter. But Jared Allen is flourishing again under Jacque Vaughn. It's a really difficult situation. We can all be mad at DeAndre Jordan for, you know, signing this contract with this team and entrenching himself on the salary cap sheet of the Nets, which is going to potentially force our favorite little tall nerd, Jared Allen, out of the roster. But this is just the situation. This, when you're signing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, this is what you're going to get into. You get someone like DeAndre Jordan, and DeAndre Jordan still had value. Totally disagree that DeAndre Jordan at $10 million a year was like a terrible contract. I think he still has value. What we're just seeing now is that Jared Allen is impressive, and that Jared Allen can continue to do the things that we saw him do before this team actually got good. Was that he is a mobile shot blocking center who is dedicated to flushing the ball at the basket, who can get rebounds, and then is showing a little playmaking. It's just showing a little touch of, if the ball's in my hand and the defender's sloughing off of me and I have some room to operate, can I find a cutter? Can I find someone for an open shot? And he can do that.
More importantly than anything else, I mean, the guy played 37 minutes, 3 fouls, hasn't had more than 4 fouls in the bubble. Like, he stays home. He's conservative. He doesn't get into foul trouble. Like, how often do you see 22, 23 year old, whatever, centers that just don't struggle with foul trouble, that are, you know, kind of known for being rim protectors? That just doesn't happen.
And that's the thing, too, is like, there's an upward trajectory still because he's so young. Like, he's not going to get worse unless if there's an injury. And I don't think Jared Allen's really ever had an injury. Has he? Like, I can't think of a time when he was, you know, at a tremendous stretch of injury. Pretty much everyone else on the team besides Joe Harris has, but not Jared Allen. And it just becomes a really difficult question. The center position is where teams save money now in the NBA, unless if you had Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic. You just save money at center. You don't spend money there. You don't. The Warriors didn't when they were going on their run, even though you can consider Draymond Green a center, but he really, really isn't. He was defensively at times, but he really isn't. That's where you save money. The Nets are already spending $10 million a year on DeAndre Jordan. If the Nets want to sign Joe Harris over the luxury tax, want to use the Burr rights to sign Joe Harris, whatever he may cost, to then ask Josiah, even though as wealthy as he is, to spend, you know, 2x the amount that it would take to re-sign Jared Allen, it's just a lot of money and resources being thrown away at a position that you can get cheap. You know, there's another side to this, is that him playing so well does increase his trade value. And I don't want to look at it so coldly, but that is the truth. I could see another team getting more and more intrigued by the thought of Jared Allen being like, he's obviously a starting center for the next 10 years in the NBA. But if you're the Nets, do you want to get rid of a guy who's a starting center in the NBA for 10 years? Very sticky wicket, Brian.
I think it is a sticky wicket, and it's helpful to think about it as DeAndre Jordan is part of the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving package, you know? Like, that is, it is a part of it, right? So it's like, if you don't break that out in that, like, what are the costs or what are the benefits of DeAndre Jordan? Well, DeAndre Jordan is a direct conduit to the two best players in the team and maybe the second or third best player, or maybe the best player in basketball when he comes back from his injury. That's a pretty nice, like, weird, it's like, it's an intangible part of the rap sheet, right? So I think it's helpful for me to break it out that way, because, like, the loss of Jared Allen feels super sad. Just like the loss of it for due to, like, politicking purposes, right? That's like the worst kind of version of that. And I don't want to see it, and I hope that there's a way to work around it. But I am preparing my body for heartache as ever.
And I just want to look up, because I think there's a needle that could be thread with the Brooklyn Nets here. Because we talk about, like, is Jacques Vaughn the coach actually for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? You know, everything this next season is going to be heading towards a championship push. There's not going to be any room for, like, growth anymore, unfortunately. It's just, you only have Kevin Durant at the level that he may be at for a certain amount of years. Kyrie Irving, just by his nature, may not be a guy who's here for 8 seasons. He may only be here for another 3. And if you got 3 seasons out of him, that would be phenomenal. So this whole team is focused on this next 2020-2021 season. You could just say, we're not going to extend Jared Allen. We're just going to take you for this final year of your contract. We'll give you a qualifying offer the season after that. But just say, you know what? We will pay $4 million for Jared Allen as a 22-year-old backup center, maybe sometime starter. If we end up losing him for basically nothing, that's the price we'll pay for one real push. Because if you trade him now, you're not going to get as good of a backup center. And you're weakening your team, unless if he's part of a really big package that brings in someone incredible. Like all the names we hear about, Beal, McCollum, whoever. Ben Simmons, maybe. I don't know what's happening with him. But, you know, they could keep him, but they're probably going to then lose him for nothing. And that's not really how you build a really strong long-term basketball team. But you could look at it as, we're keeping Jared Allen for one season for sure on that last year of his rookie deal. Well, it's like signing a guy or making a trade where we only know we're going to get him for one season. Basically what the Wizards did with Bojan Bogdanovic when the Nets traded him to the Wizards, which is like, the Nets are basically acquiring a guy for one season and knowing that he's probably going to leave right after that, and they're not going to get anything for him. And that's how they could view it. It's not the best asset management, but if you're in a championship push, it is certainly something to consider. Speaking of championship pushes, if you want to make this podcast the champion of all Nets podcasts, go to Apple, iTunes, rate us 5 stars. We need them. We want to have them.
Emails, one guy from Treboy.
Oh.
Jay Cruz saying about my extremely spicy Pam Beasley take from last week. Jay Cruz, hey guys, I really enjoyed the last pod. I think it was funny when Brian exposed Pam for the fraud that she is, which leads me to my question. Can you match up this current Nets roster with who they would be from The Office? Hope you have fun with it. I think we are going to do that for bringing back the killer comparison, Mike, for fun for next week. But we should do, like, teams in the bubble, right? As the whole teams in the bubble?
Yeah.
Playoff teams?
Yeah, because the bubble really is its own version of The Office. Its own version
That's
of Dunder
so
Mifflin. You know?
Wow. Really nice.
So, we if you're an Office fan and a fan of basketball, you listen next week. We will do killer comparisons.
Well, I want them to be emailing in their versions of it. I want to steal their ticks.
Yeah, email us so we don't have to do any work.
Netspot at gmail.com. Yeah, come on. Okay.
But we'll talk about it. I mean, that's a tease.
We'll talk about
tease
it.
For next
starts
week.
Starts with a P. Oh, gosh. Okay. Lots to look forward to. Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
Hey.